So then we move to the next item, which is an enforcement item. And Mr. Robertson, please introduce item 9.
Thank you, Chair Wolf. As a general comment, items 9 and 10 are both associated with the Cambria Community Services District Emergency Water Supply Project. To provide some clarity and foundational understanding, Water Board staff member John Rocky will provide a brief overview of the Emergency Water Supply Project and the different components and orders associated with the operation of the system. Item 9 is an information item, not needing a board action. Following Mr. Rocky's overview, we will proceed with item 9 and provide Mr. Rocky will provide details on the settled administrative civil liability complaint of 6 late reporting violations for late submittal of monthly self-monitoring reports. These late reports were required by Cambria CSD's waste discharge requirements for injection of treated water into the San Simeon Aquifer. The Cambria CSD submitted full payment of the liability amount and waived their right to a hearing, thereby resolving the violations alleged in the ACL complaint. Although there is no action or decision required by the board on this item, Taya Tryon, this region's enforcement coordinator, will provide a brief summary of this settled item. And then following that, we may hear from the CSD as well and members of the public. And of course, the board can ask questions at any point along the way. And with that, I'll move it over to John Rocky.
And as we move to staff comments, the speaker cards for this item 9 are now closed. But we have one late arrival, but that's it. Oh, you're excused. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chair Wolf and members of the board. My name is John Rocky. I'm the staff person assigned to oversee most of Cambria Community Services District's permits with the Water Board. At this time, I'd like to introduce Paul Ceccarelli. He's an attorney with the Office of Enforcement and is helping the prosecution team on these two cases. This morning, we're going to present 2 uncontested enforcement items related to the emergency water supply project in Cambria and the associated Class 2 surface impoundment. Taya Tryon and I will be presenting these items today in 3 stages. First, I'll set the stage with a brief refresher about the facilities, and then Taya will provide an informational overview of the resolved ACLC, Administrative Civil Liability Complaint Item number 9. After item 9 is concluded, I'll present item 10, the proposed cease and desist order for the surface impoundment. As we will explain, the Administrative Civil Liability Complaint is resolved and no further action is needed by the board. The proposed cease and desist order is uncontested. Cambria CSD has agreed to the proposed terms, which are before you today. Both parties are recommending that the board adopt the proposed cease and desist order. So to begin, this slide shows Cambria's approximate location along California's central coast. This aerial view, zoomed in a little closer, shows the project's location relative to the town and the town's wastewater treatment plant. The project is located approximately 3 miles northwest of the municipal wastewater plant, and the Hearst San Simeon State Park is located just to the west of the advanced plant site. This aerial view, zoomed in a little closer, shows, this emergency water supply facility was designed to treat impaired groundwater to Title 22 standards and then re-inject the treated water into the aquifer to augment the district's San Simeon well field. It was designed to produce 700,000 gallons a day of reverse osmosis treated water and 65,000 gallons a day of brine. This view is looking directly north of the facility, and as you can see, it's a relatively compact modular operation. Okay, now, zooming in a little more. This graphic shows where the project sits in relation to the state park campgrounds at the over here to the left and to the lower right. There's actually two camping facilities on either side. And the San Simeon well field up here in the upper right. The emergency water supply facility is this hatched gray rectangle right here. And it's located in between Van Gordon Creeks, which are unfortunately shaded brown, and the San Simeon Creek here. The whole project is adjacent to environmentally sensitive areas. I'd like to point out that this project was permitted under the umbrella of the governor's drought emergency executive orders, meaning that the project was fast-tracked without the normal environmental reviews. Cambria Community Services District now has a supplemental environmental impact report and an adaptive management plan is currently being reviewed by the public, but their board has yet to certify those documents. Zooming in still further, this map shows where the surface impoundment is in green, the big green blob here. And again, the gray hatched rectangle is the emergency water supply plant itself. Blue pipe extending from rectangle, sorry, here we go. This carries treated water to the injection well up here in the upper right corner. Green pipe down here carries brine and waste from the emergency plant to the brine pond. Yellow line coming down here carries mitigation water to the San Simeon Creek Lagoon. Short purple pipe coming off the side of the facility takes membrane filtrate water and puts it in the percolation pond. This orange pipe next to the purple pipe takes water from well 9P7, and this is the source water for the plant. Extracts it out of the ground, sends it into the plant, and then along the blue pipe for injection. The red pipe along the top and going down, that's the distribution pipe for the city's water supply. In November 2014, the Regional Water Quality Control Board adopted permits to regulate the emergency water supply project and the associated surface impoundment under the umbrella of the governor's executive orders allowing projects to proceed without the normal environmental review. The overall emergency water supply project currently has three permits from the regional board, four if you want to count the wastewater treatment plant. It's important to understand that the administrative civil liability complaint is regarding the Title 22 order, and the cease and desist order is regarding the Title 27 order, which regulates the surface impoundment. To further set the stage, it's important to get the flavor of the compliance challenges staff has experienced with this project. Water Board staff's focus is always on protecting water quality and thereby protecting the environment and human health. This slide is intended to illustrate events that have preceded our meeting here today. Okay, now in order to put the actions before you today into context, I want to show the enforcement actions that have been undertaken to date. Again, our focus is always on water quality. The blue bubbles are considered to be informal enforcement actions. And the light purple bubbles are considered to be formal enforcement actions. All of these were taken with the goal of achieving the protection of water quality. Water Board staff uses what's deemed a progressive enforcement strategy. That is to say, our enforcement actions become more strident over time if compliance is not achieved. Today's items are the result of this progression. So that's some background on this project, and at this point I'll hand off to Taya, who will tell you about item 9. Please do.
I'm colorblind, so are the which are the three purple?
Oh, I'm sorry. Up here at the top, this ECLC for discharges to the creek. Down here about 9 o'clock, the complaint that's before you today, Tia, is about to speak about. And then about 10 o'clock here is the cease and desist order that's item 10.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chairman Young. I mean, Chair Wolf, members of the board. My name is Taya Tryon, and I'm the Enforcement Coordinator for the Water Board, and I'm here today to provide you an overview of a resolved administrative civil liability complaint that was issued to the Cambria Community Services District, or Cambria CSD, as we'll refer to it, for late reporting violations. As John showed in the previous slides, the complaint only addresses a small portion of the violations for the overall emergency water supply project and is focused on late reporting violations for the WDR that authorizes Cambria to treat and re-inject treated groundwater into the drinking water aquifer. Since startup of the Cambria CSD's emergency water supply project in January 2015, the CSD has been consistently failing to submit reports on time. The groundwater that is treated is essentially recycled water, and monitoring and timely reporting in accordance with the WDR is very important because after that treated water is injected, it takes about 2 months before that water travels to the wells that pull water out of the ground for serving potable water to the community of Cambria. The WDR that authorizes Cambria to reinject the treated recycled water was adopted by the board in November 2014. Among other reporting requirements, the WDR requires regular reporting and testing of the treated water and treatment system on a monthly, quarterly, and annual basis. For just these regular monitoring reports, the CSD reported 70% of these required reports, as shown in the next slide. So just focusing on these late reports that are required regularly between the time period of January 2015 when the treatment system started and to the end of last month, June 2017. The first column shows the report, monthly, quarterly, and annual. The second column are the number of reports that have been due during this time frame. And then the next column shows the number of reports that were late. And then the last column shows the cumulative number of days of late days for the late violations. There are many other additional late reporting violations associated with the emergency water supply project permits, but they're not just summarized here. These focus on the regular monitoring for just the reinjection of the WDR. So how did permitting staff work with Cambria CSD to try to get them into compliance with their permits? To start, permitting staff did a detailed walkthrough of all the requirements that Cambria CSD staff needed to comply with for all their permits to properly manage and operate their emergency water supply project shortly after the WDRs were adopted in November 2014. The system started operating on January 20th, 2015, and from the beginning, reports were not submitted on time. After enough data was received to warrant a reduction in sampling, permitting staff revised the MRP in October 2015 to reduce the amount of sampling. Cambria CSD continued to submit late self-monitoring reports. And throughout this time, permitting staff would email to send reminders and even to the point in October 2016 where they developed a spreadsheet for the CSD to help them manage their due dates. But late reporting continued. So then in November 2017, we issued three notices of violation that documented many violations, including the late reports. The enforcement team also issued this administrative civil liability that we're discussing today in April 2017. To address a limited portion of the late reporting requirements. The enforcement team selected six late monitoring reports for this complaint, as they were the most important reports to submit on time. The monthly reports are essential in determining whether the treated water that was reinjected into the drinking water aquifer will meet drinking water standards at the location where the potable water is extracted for direct use by the community. The six late reports selected were due after the October 2015 monitoring program revisions, and only for those periods of time when the system was in operation. These six late reports represent 77 days of late reporting violations. The enforcement teams limited the enforcement to the six identified with the goal of having a large enough deterrent so that Cambria CSD would achieve compliance with their permits, especially late reporting. The enforcement team issued this complaint for a penalty amount of $53,596, which was derived using the penalty methodology outlined in the State Water Resources Control Board's water quality enforcement policy. Cambria CSD agreed not to contest the ACL complaint, waived the right to a hearing before the Water Board, and submitted a check for the full liability amount on May 3rd, 2017. The CSD's submission of the full payment of the liability amount and waiver of the right to a hearing is considered the final settlement agreement that resolves the violations alleged in this complaint. The enforcement team's intent with this initial limited enforcement action was to achieve compliance. While not relieving the CSD of potential liability for past violations not addressed by this complaint. Therefore, going forward, if Cambria CSD does not comply with Water Board orders, the enforcement team will consider other outstanding violations in a progressive enforcement approach, unless directed otherwise by the board or the executive officer.
And as a note, we do have a reporter who is taking notes of this meeting. And so I'd like to remind everyone, when we ask questions, to speak relatively slowly so we're not causing cramping. Thank you. Yes.
Do you want us to hold questions until they have given their presentation, or how do you want to handle it?
Do you have more to add in your presentation?
I do not have more to add for item 9.
Okay. So at this time, certainly we ask questions, and then I have a couple of speaker cards, which I will have if a couple of folks come to the podium a little bit later. So I'll start with Mr. Young.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Taya, what is, of the six dates, the most recent is what?
The latest late monitoring report? The latest monitoring report that was submitted was mid-June 2017.
And you did make the comment that they're continuing to be late. What?
We issued the notice of violations in February 2017. That incorporated the January monthly monitoring report. After that, they did submit their reports on time, but the system was not in operation. So the amount of information included in the monthly monitoring reports is not as onerous.
Are they currently late?
They are not currently late.
With any reports?
Right.
Okay.
But we did issue a notice of violation for the latest one that was submitted in May 2017 because there were missing groundwater quality information, 67 missing data points.
And that's what the mid-June
that was
NOV
the
was?
May the monthly report, I believe.
Thank you.
Ms. Cervantes?
I was wondering if you could just update me on the government executive orders that allow for the expedited permitting processes, because I'm also wondering if their intent to repurpose the impoundment is also going to come under that expedited process.
Isn't that really item 10?
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that
so. I would like to,
more.
So I'll hold
if you don't
on
mind,
that
hold that for item 10. Thank you. Ms. Gray?
I just have one question. In your opinion, is this a particularly sensitive or difficult system to operate?
I guess I'll take that question. These types of advanced treatment systems are more difficult than the standard wastewater treatment plant.
And so what type of an operator would you need?
I think it's a grade 3 at least, or maybe even a grade 4. It's Jerry, do you know the grade? It's a grade 3.
It's a grade 3. Okay. And is there a grade 3 operator?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Robertson.
Well, in part, I'd like to respond to that, too. You touch on a great topic, Ms. Gray. With respect to living in a region that has a lot of small CSDs and communities, this is a challenge, short of the technical component, the managerial component, and to a lesser degree, the financial component of owning and operating these types of systems is super challenging, and that probably doesn't give it its due. And so on some level, I was actually going to hold my comments on this to 10, but I think you opened this issue, and it deserves a little bit of a response. There is a larger picture issue here with respect to small communities operating technically advanced projects and having the capacity, and I mean that from a technical aspect, really, to own and operate that system such that it stays in compliance. That's a real challenge in this region, and I don't think we should see necessarily Cambria in isolation. I think we have to figure out collectively, us included, strategies for helping them stay in compliance and not just see ourselves as a permitter here, but a little more strategically, you know. Understanding that we were under, all of us collectively, Cambria, this board, were under the gun to get something done. This community was running out of water in this circumstance. But we can probably be more prudent about how we do that such that we don't set them up for these types of issues. And I'm not speaking singularly of this community. I'm speaking in the larger context here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've borne witness to lots of small entities in our region that just do not have the capacity to operate higher level types of wastewater treatment systems and water treatment systems. And so I think if consolidation isn't a fix for us on the Central Coast level in terms of getting communities into compliance, we do need to come up with something else. So I appreciate you recognizing that.
There's a parallel here, too, and you've heard us talk about this. On the water supply side, the same condition exists of the ability or inability to operate these systems. For instance, a nitrate treatment system or some sort of treatment system for the water supply side, too. We run into this on both sides, wastewater and water supply.
Thank you.
Mayor Delgado?
Yes. Is there any controversy or disagreement on the resolution of this item?
It's an informational item,
right.
But please
right.
respond.
Have we had any objections to the staff recommendation?
So there are public comments on both sides of this issue with respect to this being too harsh an action and with respect to this being spot on or perhaps not harsh enough in action. And you will see that in the supplement. Actually, that's the supplemental for item 10, right?
So as far as the 53,000, that's really the issue here, correct?
Well, this actually is a resolved issue.
Right.
That the CSD has agreed to pay, has already paid and waived the right to a hearing. So that and the CSD actually can speak for themselves on whether this is they're comfortable with this issue.
Okay, so the objections that we have in our it's for the next item.
Correct.
This
it's
item.
Related
correct.
To the cease and desist order. I got like
okay,
everyone
so I just
else.
Be sure,
I got ahead
I want
of the
to be clear
there.
Too. Okay, so there's really no opposition publicly submitted yet to this item, correct?
This item is already resolved, so we can take public comment, but it's already done.
Right,
so
but it's been on the agenda, and there hasn't been any public comment in objection to
we post,
the resolve.
This was all posted publicly.
Okay.
Yeah, and I have a couple of speaker cards for item 9.
Okay, and then my last item is a question. I understand from your presentation the importance of timely reports in this regard, in this matter. In hindsight, now that you have the reports that were lately submitted, was there any harm done to the environment from the operation of this facility during these months of late reports?
There were two instances, one where the nitrogen exceeded the limits that was injected back into the groundwater. And once the lab results came back from that and it was discovered that the levels were too high, they immediately shut down the system. There was a second incident where the chlorination system went down and wasn't caught. So what's called off-spec water or not properly disinfected water was injected into the aquifer. That occurred in December during a rainy period, fortunately. So DDW considered that the injected water was probably diluted sufficiently so as not to raise alarm. So those were the two instances other than early on when chlorinated water was discharged to Van Gordon Creek. So I guess three instances in all.
Okay. And those are the kinds of incidents that are better addressed sooner than later, so you want the timely reports.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson?
Just a comment and a question. My comment is I recall shortly after the Division of Drinking Water was merged into the Water Board, we had a presentation from the regional director of drinking water. I'm not sure the title. And he was talking about a direct connect potable recycled water. And he said my concern isn't, you know, a big system like is being put together in down in Orange County with huge amounts of money behind it and huge resources behind it. My concern is, you know, small communities putting together systems and how those systems are going to be functioning 20 years down the road. So I think Mr. Robertson's point is and Ms. Gray's point is well taken. My question is, you know, there's a huge number of late reports. How much of the time since permitting was this system in operation, out of operation? How many of these violations were when the system was out of operation, and what are the negative ramifications of late reporting when the system is out of operation?
Well, the system, your first question to answer that, the system has been basically operational for three periods since permitting, from January through April of 2015, from September through December of 2015, and then from September through December of 2016. So there was a couple of big blocks in between those periods. The system has not yet been operational this year, 2017, and my understanding is it may not become operational this year due to the large amount of rainfall that we had. So when the system is operating and treated water is being injected into the aquifer, the concern is that timely reports are needed because we need to know if something is going amiss so we can immediately address it, rectify it before the public's health is endangered. For the periods when the system is not operational, the monitoring mainly involves groundwater monitoring, keep track of what's going on in the aquifer beneath that. So timeliness is not such a big issue there. But still in general, you know, we want to see the reports submitted when they're due. And we've done our utmost to try to help them do that. And we recognize that it's a big challenge for them because it's a massive amount of monitoring. We even reduced some of that monitoring, as Taya described. But you can only reduce it so much. We really need to keep track of what's going on there to protect the public.
Of those 70-some late reports, I don't have the number in my head exactly, approximately, how many of them were when the system was in operation? How many were when it was out of operation?
I looked at the monthly reports, and six of those, while in operation, were late. I didn't look at the quarterly and annual because the monthly are the more important ones to catch things before the water reaches the supply wells.
Right. And I would – yes, Mr. Romero.
First, I want to explain, and this will become more apparent with the next item. By virtue of separation of functions, I'm not included in – because I'm the advisor to the board, I'm not included in much of this administrative civil liability process. So some of the questions are my own opportunity to look into this issue, too, to lay it out for you such that you have more information. And as I said, that will become more apparent in the next item. On this slide, Taya – the total value of the ACL is $53,500. Did you calculate the total value of all of those liabilities that we see on this table, and what is that number?
So I did not include another late report, which is the startup report, which was 71 days late. So what if you calculate the total number of days, because our violations are based on $1,000 per day that the report is late. So the original count of how many late days times 1,000 was $466,000. So 466 late days.
And just to reiterate, so the value of the ACL is $53,500 approximately. And that was $466,000 was the total liability.
Yeah, so if you just look at this figure right here, if you calculate the total number of days late, which is 395, our maximum allowable penalty would have been $395,000.
Paul Ciccarelli, staff counsel. I would just like to clarify that the maximum penalty for the alleged violations is $77,000, because those are 77 days late in total over those six reports. The total count in that large $466,000 maximum penalty would be for the total reporting violations, and not which include but are also excluded from that $77,000 that are alleged in the complaint.
Okay. So before having a couple of speaker cards, could you put the slide that listed all of the different violations? You had a slide that had, you know, a 360. Here we go. Yeah, that one. You know, there were comments made by, you know, some of my colleagues about, you know, small systems and the challenges and the limitations. And I think we need to reflect on that and realize, yes, on one hand, it is correct that smaller systems, you know, have more limited human resources. But on the other hand, within our region, we do have well over 100 systems. In fact, I asked the question a little bit earlier to Michael, how many systems we have, said maybe 150. And I think in any system that we operate, maybe a water treatment plant, maybe it be an oil extraction facility, a landfill, we all need to know our limits and our resources. And we all need to understand risk management. So I'm not going to go through each and every one of these, but I would submit to you that many of these violations do not require level three in order to resolve these. Some of these are just not doing the daily job and letting things slide. So I do sympathize with you know, resource limitations. But the fact is, you know, it's licensed to operate a plant, and there are some expectations. And that is probably why also staff has, I think, exercised, you know, a fair amount of patience here. I mean, you didn't come with a hammer down. So I think we took into account the fact that, you know, there are limitations in terms of operator staff to provide us the proper timely reports, accuracy, et cetera. But there are certain things in there that I would say there's not a whole lot of excuse for it. So that's my take, and I'm speaking more in this area from a engineering management aspect of the project. So having said that, I would like to ask Tina Dickinson. You have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Tina Dickinson, Cambria. Thank you, Chair, and members of the board and staff. And thank you for this opportunity to speak on this item. In addressing the accumulated NOV fines, which I had assumed were $597,000, so the $124,000 I didn't hear mentioned in the presentation, maybe it was not included in this particular item. However, even if it's $466,000, I believe the regional board's decision to reduce that amount to a total of $53,596 shows a significant amount of leniency toward the district. The CCSD should consider itself fortunate, and I would think extremely grateful. As a member of this community, Arcambria, and a ratepayer, I wish to express my gratitude to the regional board for this huge savings to the district. When I read comments from Cambria residents complaining about the fines and the cost to, which is number 10, the cost to remove the brine waste from the surface impoundment, I was reminded that the district set aside a fund of $1 million to issue for issues related to the emergency water facility, or as they now refer to it, the sustainable water facility. The district then has those funds set aside. The district, in its rush to judgment, as in this case, and since you've brought other items up, I'm going to address it. The rush to judgment, within 6 months, this plant was built, a sophisticated plant, and they have not been able to manage it. The costs are way over the projected initial funding for this, and it is frustrating for me and others in the district to see what has happened as a result. But the district is now looking at spending almost $1 million on an office space for themselves. So the district is in way over its head, while the ratepayers continue to foot the bill for spending that is out of control. They simply are not up to the job. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment. And the next speaker card is listing item 9 and 10, and we need to split them. So I don't want to have this item commingled with 10. So having said that, I would like Mr. Jerry Gruber to come and specifically limit yourself to item 9. Thank you. And you're welcome, you know, in item 10 to come back.
Thank you, Chairman Wolf and board members and Regional Water Quality Control Board staff. I'm Jerry Gruber. I'm the general manager for the Cambria Community Services District, and it's very difficult to sit here and to review these violations. And on the flip side, very humbling. I was sat before you a couple years ago in San Luis Obispo
with the community, and you were gracious enough to give us a Title 22 and Title 27 permit for this sustainable water facility. We've made significant improvements regarding the administrative portion of these violations. The complexity associated with the reporting is something that we recognized after we met with the Regional Water Quality Control Board staff on February 1st. And the violations were discussed, and so we hired a full-time person specifically to address the reporting components of both the Title 22 and Title 27. That person will later on be given a brief PowerPoint presentation with me. She's highly qualified. She has a master's degree, and we've spoken briefly about limits on our resources. And I think that's one thing that we've learned from this is that we do have limits. But as Chairman Wolf said, that's no excuse. So with that being said, we do have a full-time person who is handling the administrative portions of these. The operational component is the board authorized as part of the 2017-2018 budget a full-time CPO, a chief plant operator, to run the facility. Again, recognizing the complexity associated with it. And I think your executive director articulated very well, along with the board member Gray, on the challenges associated with complex systems and limited resources with small districts or small cities for those matters. I think this type of system is going to be a system that you're going to see more frequently throughout California, especially some of the rural areas like Cambria. And so as Mr. Rocky indicated that their goal as staff is water quality. And I think as we look back at the water quality results for this particular project, especially since it's in indirect reuse, we see that the water quality being produced from that facility is meeting all the necessary requirements. With that being said, I'm hoping at some point in time, after maybe a year of operation collectively, we can sit down and we can reduce some of those sampling requirements that would thus reduce some of the reporting requirements. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And I just received another speaker card, which was for item 9 and 10. I have closed item 9, so I will then include the speaker card for item 10. But thank you very much. So at this time, I do not have any more cards for this particular item. So any further comment from my fellow board members? Mr. Young?
Thank you. So, Taya, I see some comments in the letters that we have from some community members requesting that the regional board better supervise the district going forward. And I'm just wondering what could be done in that respect in kind of a novel way. I mean, I don't think we're there to hold anyone's hand. They're supposed to hire professionals that know what they're doing. It's their responsibility to adhere to the terms of the permits. But is there anything that can be done in terms of requiring them to possibly report back to us certain events that take place that might help to keep their feet on schedule?
I think I will hand that off to John, who's the permitting staff and handles the day-to-day. I kind of deal with things as the when the permitting staff want to take enforcement. I'd like to, from an enforcement perspective, I would like to see how the reporting goes once the operation of the treatment system starts up again. When it's not in operation, the monitoring requirements are not as important and not as tedious. So I'd like to see how they do moving forward. But that is the biggest question, is can they handle this system? And can they operate in a manner that is compliant with our permits? And
Is it a matter of just not having enough man hours to do this, or are there complexities presented by operating a system like this that requires a lot of continual fine-tuning to get it to operate the way it should operate?
It is a complicated system. When it's running, there's a number of monitoring points throughout the system that get monitored and reported to us, in addition to the water going into the ground, the water coming out of the ground, all that stuff. And as a staff person who's been working on this for a couple of years now, the challenge for me is I don't want to layer more requirements on them when they're struggling to already meet the requirements they have. So, we've thought about that, and we've pondered the various ways to try to help them do a better job. I think that because this is an indirect potable reuse system, there is some minimum level of monitoring that is always going to be required. I know the district's, is eager to sort of reduce that as an answer to some of the reporting problems, but I'm less convinced that that's really the answer to doing this. So it's a difficult question, how to better facilitate them. And I will say that in hindsight, I don't think that they were served very well by me trying to sort of understand and help them along initially. I think it probably would have been better if I had sort of drawn a hard line and said, every time you are late or every time you miss a monitoring data point or, whatever it is, you're going to get a notice of violation, just so that the tone is set right in the beginning that the expectations are high for these kinds of facilities, as they should be. So, going forward with other facilities that are going to come online that are similar to this in the future, that's going to be my approach, is, telling them right up front, there's sort of a no-tolerance situation for being late. Yeah, we know it's a big burden on you, but this is part of, what you've taken on here with this project, and you need to live up to the permit's requirements.
Okay, so I don't think I really had my question answered, and that is, it sounds like you're telling me it's more of a function of lack of resource to collect all the monitoring and get it collected into the reporting. I didn't really hear you say that this is so sophisticated, the system, that it requires fine-tuning continually, and so there's a lot of moving parts.
Well, in terms of the fine-tuning, now there's a lot of monitoring points, but once they, have the system up and running, it runs. Somebody needs to be there to sort of make sure that nothing goes awry as a day and the week and the month, moves on and the system's operational, but there's not a lot of tweaking and fine-tuning that I'm aware of.
So then it's a function of needing more resources to do and collect the monitoring. Is that what it is?
I think that's right. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that a district like Cambria has so many diverse things that they're trying to manage in addition to the advanced treatment plant that it's really tough for them. I mean, they're doing ambulances and fire and water and wastewater treatment systems and collection systems and all this stuff, and the emergency water supply system, and it's tough to keep all that stuff going because, you'll develop a water leak in town, and naturally your focus goes on, finding that leak, but everything else is not clearly in focus during those times. So maybe the answer is some kind of a special district situation or something that's dedicated just to this facility and has the resources that are dedicated exclusively to that facility and are not performing multiple duties.
Is the monitoring being done timely?
Since our meeting in February of this month, all the reports have been on time.
Now, my question was, not are the reports getting filed timely, is the monitoring being done when it's supposed to be done?
We did just recently issue another notice of violation for missed monitoring for the groundwater. There was, I believe, 67 data points that were missed in a recent submittal.
Is that the first time this has happened?
No.
So why isn't that something that's being brought to our attention?
Well, it is being brought to your attention in the presentation as it unfolds today.
Okay.
And in this latest one was very recent. And these notices of violations, as I explained in that earlier slide, those are considered to be informal actions that don't necessarily come before the board.
Mr. Young, as you know, we issue notices of violation all the time. It is part of the process of escalating enforcement to compliance. That's the earliest. John referenced it as informal. That's the earliest version and lightest touch of the sort of progressive steps into enforcement.
So Mr. Gruber spoke of hiring somebody to help with the report filing. We're going to be hearing a presentation. Should that help them become more timely? And what is your experience with interacting with this person?
I've had a very good experience interacting with her, and that was a positive step forward on the district's part to hire her to help make sure these reports are in on time and all the data was properly collected. He also mentioned hiring a full-time operator for the plant, and in my mind, I'm wondering how that's going to work for the organization since there are large chunks of time when this plant isn't operating, and I'm not sure, you know, what that person is going to do during all that time. So it's, you know, just another of the challenges the district has. Well,
Dr. Wolf spoke of, what, over 100 similar systems just in our region?
Michael? And, you know, and one thing, too, you know, kind of a bigger picture here. You know, Mr. Young asked, you know, if we provided quite a bit of help. And I was chair when this whole plant permitting took place. And this was when your predecessor, Mr. Ken Harris, was the EO. No, we brought the Office of Emergency in order to get things moving. You know, there was about 90 days of potable water reserve in that facility. At one time, we had on and off 12 staff working to help Cambria. 12. We actually stopped other projects to provide quite a bit of help. You know, this was a disproportionately very large amount of resource that we put in. We also realized that the district really was struggling with the permittings, the various permits that were involved. So we said, we're going to help you. So actually, we went beyond our roles as regulators by being the facilitators and helping them with their permits, including some of the consultants they had say, hey, you need to turn right or you need to turn left. So I'm kind of looking back also at the history here because right now we have a snapshot of a present. But, you know, our board went above and beyond the call of duty, and I want to make sure that's understood, to help this project get off the ground. So, you know, having said that, that's why also I have a little bit of a residual expectation that, you know, we disproportionately help this particular facility. I mean, we cannot do this with everybody else. You know, there's just not enough staff hours to do it. But I just want to share this, you know, for general background, call it a little bit of a wallpaper here in the room as we discuss this item. So, sorry. Any other input or comment?
I guess I just have a comment since this, you know, this project predated my involvement on the board, and I appreciate all of that. I guess I'm concerned that, and I'm happy that we facilitated. I think it's good that in our role as quote-unquote regulators, we're also helping people along the way. We're humans, not automatons. So I think it's appropriate that we engage But I certainly am concerned that we're enabling something that potentially wasn't ripe. And I understand that it was, you know, an emergency situation and there's lots of complexities. And I live in the realm of gray. That's my name. But black and white is, can you operate the system or not? And that's what we're really concerned about. And so there really needs to be some rubber meeting the road, not only in the monitoring, but is there the ability to operate this system? And if there are similar systems, perhaps there are operators that can, you know, come in on a rotating basis. There's got to be the ability to have some, you know, creative solutions if this system is to move forward. So that's just my general comment.
But I would say, Ms. Gray, that, you know, this plant now is beyond the, you know, what I'll characterize as the shakedown cruise. I mean, this system is in a steady state operation. All, but pretty much, you know, so it's not as every day, whoops, you know, we're going to have to change this. It's a system that is in balance, you know, in terms of its mechanical functions and operating functions and monitoring functions. So you know, and I think you alluded to that a little bit when you use the term, there's not a whole lot of tweaking that has to take place. And, I mean, even if you take a conventional plant, I mean, there are certain minor changes and adjustments you have to make, even in a conventional plant. If you take winter months versus summer months with sewer discharge, if you take facilities that have a high amount of tourism industry, you know, you all of a sudden have all the hotels which have full occupancy. That impacts the burden of a plant. So, I mean, everybody has those constraints, right?
Yes, and I would like to clarify that the district has made changes to the system along the way. So, for instance, initially when they had this unfortunate discharge of chlorinated water to Van Gordon Creek, they installed a dechlorination system so that wouldn't happen again. In response to the disinfection problems they had in December that I mentioned, the district, I believe, is either installed or is in the process of installing an automatic shutdown system so that when that occurs in the future, water doesn't get injected into the well. So I don't really think of those as tweaks. Those are sort of process changes that they've installed as they went along and encountered problems. But you're correct. There are, you know, little, you know, turnings of valves here and there, tweaking. That's what I consider tweaking as the system is operational. So now there's been three big chunks of time that this system has been operated for, and I think I would agree with your characterization that it's in a steady state now, aside from these, you know, the automatic shutoff that they've installed. So they, I mean, it should be running along as good as it's going to go now.
Okay, thank you. So I'd like to bring this item to conclusion. Any further comment or input from my fellow board members? Okay, I see none. So this was an informational item, and you have one more comment to make, Mr. Robertson?
Yeah, just on the overall item itself. So the role of enforcement is to achieve compliance and protect water quality, not to find financial restitution. And I think the evaluation of the potential liability relative to the assessed liability and what ultimately was paid by the district reflects that staff was measured in their assessment and approach here, balancing all of those things.
Okay, thank you. So this closed this item. And what I'd like to suggest before we move to item 10, which is going to take a while, is it's 5 to 10, and take a little 15-minute break before the next item, and we reconvene at 10 past 10. Thank you.